that difference between being grateful and being satisfied. See, because now God brought me to a place where my old bones got stronger. He brought me to a place where the aches and pains went away. He brought me to a place now I make more most weeks than I made in a month on disability. That's what God will do in your life when you just believe and you begin to be grateful. See, because I could have been satisfied, because I know people around me, some of my good friends were just so happy for me when I got disability. Oh, you got to work no more. You got it made now. They were okay with me living off $700 a month. But God fortified my body. God made me a strong man. God knew that it wasn't over for me. And now God has made me a lender and not a borrower. That's what the word says. See, so I'm yet grateful, but I was never satisfied with that. And I've said this before, the difference in your lot in life and your destiny is your lot in life is where you choose to settle. Because I could have chose to settle there and got that disability the rest of my life and $15, $20 worth of food stamps the rest of my life and going to the food bank the rest of my life. I could have settled there. That could have been my lot in life. It was legal. The government said I could have it. I didn't lie to get it. But that just wasn't enough for me. I knew God put something more inside of me. I was with a ministry called The Misfits. Some of you guys are still part of The Misfits ministry. Great ministry. Great ministry. 3 years later, as I first started, 3 years later, some of the same people. I'm talking about able-minded, able-bodied people are okay with coming to get that meal every Sunday and not try and still homeless. And still homeless. Now listen, I'm not criticizing anybody, because some people don't have the mental capacity to do some things. Some people don't have the physical ability to do some things. But when you get what I call a that-or-do spirit. It's called a that-or-do spirit. In AA, they have a model. Anybody know what the model of AA is? See, because I went through, so I've been after trying to get clean for a lot of years. So I went through about every program you could imagine. Richmond State Hospital, South Unit, everywhere you can imagine, the Washington House about 30 times. So I've learned a lot of the language. You know what the model of AA is? The model of AA is the good is too often the enemy of the best. Think about that. The good is too often the enemy of the best. You got a girlfriend. God has blessed you with a girl. You get a job. You start working and everything. 10 years later, you're still living together because that's good enough. In the eyes of God, you're living in sin. But that's good enough. That's good enough. That'll do. So I don't want my life in a that'll do spirit. And there's no kidding if I can say this. I'm 8 years celibate as far as sleeping with a woman, because I choose to wait till I get married. I choose to wait till I get married. And you know what? That's just something I promised God, because I don't want to get to that point where I'm just satisfied. Let me tell you a story. We don't get into work, but I want to tell you a story. There was a guy. He had a son about 6 years old. Some of you guys got kids. Mike can relate to this story. A little young boy. But anyway, the father gets up one morning and go to work. And as he's getting dressed for work, he does like me. He turns the news on. Because I listen to the news every morning before I go to work. It's just what I do. And on there, he heard a story about some country he had never heard of. And how somebody over there had got this sickness that nobody ever heard of. Didn't matter much to him. He didn't know the guy. He didn't know the country. Turned it off. You know, just like most of them, he blew it off. No big thing. He's riding to work, the news, he's listening to the news again. No, he's coming home from work, he's listening to the news again, and he hears about somebody in another country they never heard of, had got this disease, had got this thing that's going to kill him. And nobody knows how to fix it. No big deal. It's no big deal. That night he gets through eating. He watches where he go to sleep. He watches the nightly news. And on there, all of a sudden, there's 24 cases. There's 24 cases of this thing in these countries way, way away from here. No big deal. He sleeps, gets up the next morning. 4,000 cases in countries everywhere. After work the next day, 80,000 cases. The numbers were just starting to get astronomical. Then it got to Europe. This thing got to Europe. And the president closed the borders. The United States said, wait, we're not going to let this in. We don't know what it is. We don't know how to combat it. We're going to close the borders. We're not going to let anything in. We're not going to let this thing get over here. On the way home from work, he heard about a guy in Kansas who had contracted this illness. And it began to spread through the United States like wildfire. It was going everywhere. People in every state, every city was starting to contract this thing. They couldn't find a cure for. People would start dying in other countries from this thing that they couldn't find a cure for. People are going rampant. They're all over the place. Everybody's running around in masks. They're in a panic because they have no cure for this thing, and it's everywhere now, all in his city. So these scientists came up with something one day, and they came on the radio and came over the TV with that emergency broadcast system. Say, hey, we found a cure. But it takes a certain kind of blood. They say it takes a certain kind of blood. It's a real rare blood. And it's hard to find. So we need everybody under the sound of this emergency alert to get to your nearest hospital so you can get checked and see if you have this blood that can save the world. So that guy, he gets up, gets his six-year-old son and his wife, and they go down there, and they're all kicking around, and the place is just packed, people far as you can see. They go in, they give their blood, and they come on back out, and they're sitting on the parking lot, and they're listening and waiting, hoping. Then all of a sudden, a man in a white hospital coat comes running out. He's got a paper in his hand. And he's screaming a name. He's screaming a name loud as he can scream the name. And the little boy says, Daddy, that's me. He said, Daddy, that's me. So they grab the little boy and they race to the doctor. And they said, wow, they say, he has the blood. Say, he's got just the right blood to turn this thing all the way around. So the little boy was happy. The father was happy. They go in there. They take him in. They get him all dressed up to get a little blood out of him. He's sitting on this gurney. Imagine your son sitting on this gurney, kicking his little legs. Because daddy's there, he's okay. You know, when daddy's there, it's okay. You know, if you've been around your dad, once your dad got there, it was just okay. So daddy was there, it was okay. And so the doctor came in and said, well, I need you to sign this paper so we can take the blood. And the dad was proud. He was proud that his son was going to be the one. And he says, well, how much blood do you need? And the doctor looked at him and said, didn't you know? He said, we're going to need it all. He said, we're going to need it all. And he's looking through the glass at his son sitting there kicking his legs on that bed. His boy looks just like him. Only son, only child. And he's watching him. So he says, wait a minute. He said, first let me at least talk to him. And he goes in and he talks to the boy. The boy in his young age began to understand. He understood that that was the only thing that was going to save the world, that he was willing to sacrifice his life. So they went in and took the blood. And they started spreading it through and made this serum from this boy's blood. And that disease subsided. It began to back up. And it began to back up everywhere. People were made whole. Everywhere people were beginning to regain their life. Everywhere. And so as everything got right and everything got clean, the father decided, I'm going to have a memorial for my little boy. And he invited the same people who got the blood to come to the memorial for my little boy. But he began to get excuses. You know, I would come, but we're cooking out that day. I would come, but you know, my son plays baseball that day. I would come, but me and John and Greg, we planned a fishing trip. How would you think that father felt? How would you feel that's your son? Let that sit in for a second. How would you feel? And just like you felt, that's how God feels when we turn our back. When it's time to give God praise and honor God for what he's done in our life, sending his only son to die, giving all the blood he had. And we don't have enough. We're satisfied. I'm satisfied with what he did. They were satisfied with what that boy did because it saved their life, but they weren't grateful. So is being satisfied enough? I asked that question, is being satisfied enough? And when I began to think of stuff like that, it challenges me. I look at the children of Israel when they came out of Egypt. This may be kind of a little stretch of it, but when they came out of Egypt and Moses was gone up on that mountain for them 40 days. Now, they saw. And we say, we you know what? We criticize them. We as a people today really criticize them and call them stupid. Because we all say, and I've been guilty of myself, how can they see the miracles happen firsthand and still doubt God? Maybe I'm the only one that's ever said that. But how can they see all the plagues that came against Egypt? And you realize all those plagues that came against Egypt, they were all plagues against a god of Egypt. You can look it up. I know the names. I can't think of them all by heart, but you can look it up. All of them, the final plague was against Pharaoh, who was a god in Egypt. But they were all against the gods of Egypt. But they saw these things. But when they got out there in the wilderness, they're away from Egypt, Moses gone, they decided they're going to have a party now. They were satisfied with being away, but they weren't really grateful. They were satisfied, and they began to doubt, down talk Moses. They began to badmouth Moses. They began to doubt what he had done and what they had saw. We find ourselves in the same situations. I used to find myself coming home. Like I said, I found myself coming home from prison and sleeping on somebody's couch. Sleeping in somebody's basement. And that was okay because that's what I had to do then. That was okay. You know, so there's nothing wrong with those things. But something became wrong with those things when I became satisfied with somebody feeding me all the time. Something became wrong with me as a grown man with a son grown. And I've got to always ask somebody for something to sustain my needs. See, because I'm not mentally challenged. I'm not physically challenged. And if you're one of those people, this doesn't really apply to you because I understand sometimes we have to have, and that's why God says, to whom much is given, much is required. Right. See, because one day God is going to come back looking for dividends on his investment. You know, that's one thing I love about that brother in that corner back there. I've been knowing that brother since I was a little boy. Strong man. Went through some things. Made some choices. And now he's coming back on the rebounding side and God is with him. But the world seems to try to beat him down. And the world tries to seem to hold a barrier. But that brother don't give up. That brother's a fighter. See, because the measure of a man, which is the same thing as the measure of a woman, is you do what you have to do. My father took a job in General Motors in Defiance, Ohio, because he had 6 kids. And my father at that time didn't even have a bicycle, let alone a car. I hear people today, well, I won't take that, but I don't want to ride the bus. But you're satisfied with eating off your brother and sister. You're satisfied with eating off your mother and father, but you won't take the bus. The measure of man is you do what you have to do. You get up and do what you have to do. You let God help you and give you direction. But I used to complain about everything because I was not grateful. I was satisfied. I would come, because this is my first time coming to these meetings. So I come to these meetings and say I get off of house arrest on the 7th. Whatever day the meeting was before the 7th was my last meeting. Because I was satisfied. It got me out the house, gave me a meal. Now I'm okay. This is another story. When I was a sophomore in school. And I was sitting in a class. And this guy, he was a senior, played hockey. Big old guy. And he was out there with a couple of girls. They were spitting spitballs in the back of my head. I thought I could fight a little bit. But I looked back at this guy. He was kind of a big guy. And I was 40% sure I could take him. I was 40% sure I could take him because I knew what I had been through. But I got a brother. Some of y'all don't probably even pass my brother if you've been in prison. I got a brother named Buster. And if you ever pass Buster, you know him because he's always mad. Buster will start a fight in an empty room. Always mad. And he's crazy strong. I watched him bench 400 pounds. He's crazy strong. But anyway, I asked the teacher for a pass. I said, hey, I have to use the restroom. Can I get a pass? He gave me a pass. I'm at Northrop. I run and find my brother. I said, brother, I said, Crab, I call him Crab. I said, Crab, this dude spitting spitballs in the back of my head. After class, I'm going to whoop him. He's a big dude, but I'm going to whoop him after class. I'm telling you. Crab said, what room you in? I told my room I'm in. He said, I'll be there. So we got outside the classroom. I'm looking for Crab. I don't see him nowhere. Now the guys out front laughing at me, making fun of me and everything else. All the girls, they're laughing. Everybody's laughing. I don't see Crab, but my temper said, well, you know what? You 40% sure you can take him. Try that 40. I reached up and hit that dude with everything I had. I gave him everything I had, square in his face. That big old dude ate that punch. Boy, he just swallowed one time. And then buckle or nothing. I thought, well, good God. So now I'm looking hard for Crab. You know? Looking hard. So I turn around and he looks up at me and he throws a little book down on the ground. So I rear back. I figured I'm going to take a step. This time I took a step into him and bow! Give him all I had. That cat ate that punch too. I said, good gravy. That dude looked at me and he started screaming. And he ran toward me. He grabbed me and threw me on the wall. I hit the locker. I seen him put that big old meat hook back. And all I did was get ready to buckle up like this. And I felt his arm come off of me. And I had my eyes closed. So I don't know what really happened. No, with the wind or what. But when I looked up, my brother had him over his head. Just like that. Had his whole body over his head. Just like this here. And he looked at me. And he took him in. Boom! When that dude hit the concrete, it loosened him up. I told my brother, I said, get back, Crab. I got him now. I got him now. See, that's how we do God. God will get us out of the trouble. We get off of this. We get off of house arrest. We want to quit coming to the very thing that saved us. We want to quit coming to the very thing that helped us get the strength to go one more day. How many times you sat in the house and just been irritated and wanted to tell the man, take this thing off my leg and send me back. I want to finish my time. Been there. But then you come here and God, through the mentors and through the men and women of God, give you the strength to go one more day. When the doctor says it's almost over, you got cancer. God, you come around the men and women of God and you get strength. You go to one more day. You're on dialysis. They think it's, and God give me the strength to go one more day. And as God began to win the small battles, I began to understand I'm not afraid of the big battles. Not afraid of the big battles because I trust him. I'm grateful. I'm grateful today for what God has done in my life. You know, when I first started working out at Shamball and they told me about bringing other people in, the enemy struck me. And my back and stuff started with messing up. And my legs started going numb. And I couldn't figure out, what is this? Somebody, you got sciatic nerves as well, whatever, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I could hardly walk. But I went to Shambar every day. I leaned on that machine and I picked them pipes and I moved them and did it every day and I asked God to give me the strength. Somebody told me, somebody in my family told me, man, Lyle, and at night I would go out with a 10-point coalition and I had to take a cane. And I'd get on my cane, I'd go about a half a block and say, y'all hold on. And I'd have to rest. And somebody said, Lyle, you ought to quit. Just quit, man. You can't do it all. But you know why I didn't quit? Didn't quit because of you. I didn't quit because I was a bridge. God was going to bring people through me in there. He's going to change lives through me in there. Sometimes you have to suffer. You can't share in the glory if you don't share in the suffering. Sometimes the measure of a man, you got to do what you got to do. It's not always easy. Yeah, they get on my new nerves downtown. Yeah, they idiots sometimes. But that's okay. You got to do what you got to do because it's not always about you. I've seen a homeless guy walk and I picked him up and I gave him a ride one day and I fed him. And I told him about Shambaugh. And I had applications in my car and I gave him an application. He filled it out. I took it in and went and talked to the people in the office about it. They called him the next day. Today that young man is working in Shambaugh and has been there now for a few months. And he's got a home and his wife and his daughter is with him. That's why I didn't quit when my back was hurting. Amen. That's why you don't give up. God has called you to be a conduit. He's called you to be an example to somebody else. When I had cancer, I was in my room by myself one night and the enemy came to me. He said, you're going to die. I turned the TV down. He said, you're going to die. You know what I told him? I said, everybody's going to die. Now get out here and leave me alone so I can watch TV. See, because I understand something. If I believe heaven is what they say it is, why am I scared? Right. If I die tonight, it's okay with me. I don't care who gets that car. I don't care who gets my apartment. I don't care who gets my gold. I don't care who gets that bank account. I don't care who gets that stuff up there. It doesn't matter. Because I'm going home. Because I've done what he's asked me to do. I'm looking for well done. My good and faithful servant. No fear in me. They can come back tomorrow and tell me I got cancer. I'm going to do what I need to do. But I'm going to trust God. Because I'm not afraid. And if I keep living, I'm going to keep doing what I need to do. And watch other lives get changed. God has called you to help somebody else. He's called you. God only blesses you to be a blessing. He's going to come back. I'm going to end with this. I'm going to close with this. He's going to come back looking for dividends on his investment. He's going to tell you, I made you strong when other men were weak. See, I gave you athleticism above most men. I gave you a mind to reason and figure things out, but not everybody. I gave you the activities of all your limbs where you can do anything you want to do. I gave you the ability to reason. What did you do with it? Some men were born blind. Some men were born halt, lame. So what did you do when I give? See, let me put this down in a term we can understand. The dope man give you an ounce of cocaine and tell you, hey, at the end of the week, I'll be back. Come Friday, he knock on that door. He want his money or his product. If you don't have any money or any product, you know what you got? Stitches, probably. You got a problem. If you're lucky, you got some stitches coming. But you got a problem. When God comes back at the end and you stand before him, he can say, what did you do with what I gave you? Here's my hope. That he says, boy, you were a fool for a long time. He said, I was wondering if you were ever going to get it right. He said, but you know what? You finished strong. Come on in, my good and faithful servant. Let's pray.